Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
SecondCityHockey.com.
Jonathan Toews.
Commit to us. Commit to the jersey. Commit to our people here.
Welcome into another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the editor here and site manager for Second City Hockey, and I've only got two of my usual line mates with me this evening. Shepard Price is off venturing in parts unknown, so he's not available this week. But we've got two other people with us tonight, and you're used to their voices by now. You can find him on Twitter at Mill182, and he is to Second City Hockey what Brendan Kelly is to Lawrence Arms. It is Mill Savage.
Well, don't give me that much credit.
That is one of the most fun bands to see, I think. Just fun. Every time I see them, it's fun.
I mean, we're having fun here, aren't we?
We're always, if nothing else, Mill, we are always having fun.
Agreed.
And then also with us this evening, she is this Second City Hockey's Boolean Wall of Text. And she's not on Twitter, but she's at Second City Hockey under the moniker LBR. It's Betsy.
Speaking of at least some music, what's y'all's first concert you're going to see? Because I've got mine already booked for Kesha in August.
Forgot Kesha was a thing. I do.
Oh, my God. I hate you.
Sorry. Well, she hasn't been around for like 10 years, right?
Dude, she had a big album. All that controversy happened with her, and
yes.
And she had a breakout song that was like Grammy nominated, "Praying," and like that was like a couple years ago, not too long ago.
Because
I want to say "Praying" was 2016 or 2017. 2017.
Did you have a new album within the last year? Because I was in cars for like 12 hours, and I believe Kesha came up in discussions at some point.
She did come out with, she does have some new music. I don't know if it was an album drop completely. I'm just listening to her High Road. I know that came out in 2019. I think that's what she's going to tour with. She's gonna do a tour. High Road was her last album. It was 2019. Nothing off of it, I think, went very high, but she doesn't get enough credit for how good a writer she is, because that's what she was before. Okay. She went big.
I guess this would be Shepard. Shepard's always the pop pop music guy, and I am not. I don't know how much Mill is, but I guess to get an answer to your question, Betsy, Mill, what's your first concert going to be?
Not counting stuff that I'm like technically working on, either playing or shooting photos or something. I have tickets to a fest called Furnace Fest in Alabama.
Ooh.
I don't know if I'm going to go or not yet, but it's been rescheduled like three times. and it happened to fall on my birthday, so that's kind of cool.
So who's playing at Furnace Fest? Is Hot Water Music playing at Furnace Fest? I feel like they should.
It's like Killswitch Engage, Misery Signals, Poison the Well.
So more counterparts. Okay.
Yeah, it's like that kind of stuff. They used to have this festival back. It's like in these big furnaces, like those. Like it's hard to explain.
Well, isn't Alabama in the summer kind of like a furnace anyway?
Yeah, I guess so. So I've only been there like once or twice, but it's that, or I think I have Armor for Sleep tickets, but I don't know when they're going to come to Chicago.
I had tickets to that, and then it got canceled, and I don't know if they've rescheduled or not. But I just saw one that was Rise Against, the Descendants, and Menzingers are playing in late August at whatever that outdoor venue is that used to be Meg's Field, like Huntington Bank Pavilion. That's like last week of August. That's probably my first show.
I want to go to that too.
Unless something comes up before then, because I'm totally ready to go to a concert.
Yeah, I want to go to that too. I want to see Descendants again. As far as the pop music thing goes, I study a lot of it, but I mostly study like writers, not artists.
Yeah.
Because I'm more on that end of the, like, I'm not pretty and I can't sing very well, but I write music. So I'm kind of like one of those people, just not as good.
All right.
So like that new girl that's like 18 and put out an album. It's number one everywhere.
Olivia.
Yeah.
Some
40 year old indie dude wrote and produced it all. Yeah. And he was in some band, and I'm just like, if that could be my future, I mean, honestly, it's not bad. It's like you kind of just get to hide from the public and make money.
that's a hell of a business plan.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'll ever make it there, but we can hope.
We can all hope.
She's a Disney star, by the way. Like,
yeah, I looked it up today because I was like curious as to what's all the pop hits right now, because I'm just so out of touch with reality. And I saw hers was all over, so I looked it up. It said she was some Disney actress who became a singer, and then I looked at the album credits, and I was like, oh, this guy. I mean, there's some good hooks on there for sure. I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, I think they mass produce. Like, if you're a Disney star or Nick star, you might be able to be a like pop star later in life.
That's pretty much their business model, I think.
Some of them go crazy, like Miley and like Demi had some issues, but.
I mean, like, we can go back to like the 90s and like the Mickey Mouse Club people.
Oh, yeah.
So, for sure.
They've been doing that for a while.
And Max Martin wrote almost everybody's album. That dude has, the only two people who have more number one hits than Max Martin are John Lennon and Paul McCartney.
I don't even know who that person is.
Because he doesn't perform. He just writes. He wrote Britney Spears' entire first record.
Yeah, he's behind a bunch of the biggest.
He's a G.
He's a
Swedish dude. Yeah.
And he looks like a Swedish dude too, because he's like bearded up, long hair.
Yeah, he's sick. I mess with Max Martin hard.
Like, yeah.
I'm a fan.
Everything from Backstreet Boys to Katy Perry. He used to do Avril stuff. If you ever think that Avril Lavigne's old, like some of her stuff when she was younger, and some of Taylor Swift's stuff, circa, like...
The two albums that I own are, like, the Max Martin ones, 89 and the one before Red.
But her like, single, like, I Knew You Were Trouble and that kind of stuff, if you think those sound like Avril Lavigne songs a little bit, it's because some of the stuff that they did in that does sound... They're almost identical to some of that stuff they did on Avril Lavigne's, like, big album that went out in the 90s, so...
First one's 2002, but
I was about to say Avril Lavigne was not the 90s. I'm not quite that old.
No, because I got.
All right, you're right. It's...
Damn, Betsy.
I got this.
Trying to remember my childhood here.
The same day I got Pink's record with "Get This Party Started," I got Avril Lavigne's CD back in like 2002. I remember that day. It was a good day.
We're just gonna start a music pod at some point.
I do that already.
Oh, okay. Well.
You guys just come on our podcast one day.
Maybe that's what we'll do. We'll come in and talk about music. But hey, I mean, I guess we could talk about hockey at some point, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, like we usually are Blackhawk-centric around these parts, but obviously not much going on with them. We might talk about the Worlds in a little bit, but I'm sure the three of us and Shepard as well, and maybe he's taking the night off so he can focus on that Vegas game. But I'm sure we've all been watching the other playoff games. And I was a little limited this weekend because I was out of town for a wedding. And so I missed a lot of what happened. But the Montreal – so are the Montreal Canadiens actually good? Like, or are they just the product of a really shitty division?
Little of column A, little of column B.
Some of the blue, some of the yellow. Okay.
Yeah.
I think they're going to get steamrolled by whoever comes out of the series, but I'll probably be wrong because I said it on publicly.
Yeah, that's usually how that works. But I also wholeheartedly agree with you that I know they're – I've seen some people make comparisons to them and the Dallas Stars last season, but that doesn't seem like a apples-to-apples comparison for a lot of reasons. I mean, maybe they're winning in a similar way. But Betsy, you mentioned before that they have good underlying numbers. I don't remember what Dallas did last season or not.
Dallas did. Dallas okay. is always pretty good at like expected goals and such. But Montreal has, I think they were like the second best technically 5-on-5 shot share, like shot attempt share team after the Avalanche.
Okay.
It was like 55 or 56%.
Was that during the regular season or during the postseason?
During the regular season okay. for Montreal this year. Okay. And I want to say they're well, like they're top 10 in expected goal share. Let me, I think they're like almost on par with the Lightning, technically speaking. Yeah. So Montreal's 10th with 52.93. Tampa's 9th with 53.1. And then Golden Knights are 53.2. Like those are negligible number differences when you're thinking about that kind of, that's expected goal share. So I'm assuming that most of that is probably them being better defensively than not.
Yeah, it's just, it's bizarre. Like you go down their roster and it's not really all that impressive. Like their leading scorer in the regular season was Tyler Toffoli, who Hawks fans may remember from the Kings series back in the day. And while Tyler Toffoli is a good hockey player, if he's your leading scorer at the end of the regular season, that's probably a sign that you don't have the best offense in the world.
No. And even if you like are looking, I was right there. The reason their numbers are so high for expected goals is because they're they suppress quality against pretty well, but they're, quality four is not, it's like 20th or something like that. Yeah. So you're right that their players aren't getting offense. They're winning by keeping pucks out of the net, especially considering prior to these playoffs, Price wasn't doing much and he was hurt half the season. And I don't even remember who was playing behind him, but
Jake Allen.
But when you think about, the North was like this wild west when it came to like offense. Cause you had the Oilers that have the two best offensive players essentially in the league playing with each other in McDavid and Draisaitl. And then you have the Leafs who were like high octane, high offense and minimal defense if they could, you know, not a whole lot there. And then the Jets aren't good.
well, there's that.
Then losing Mark Scheifele didn't help him at all.
Sure. Yeah. But they were statistically not, they were like where the Hawks were. They just had a goalie that was outrageously good and they shot at a pretty decent percentage despite not getting quality chances on the regular. And then Ottawa's crap. I'm blanking on who the other, there's
Calgary.
The Flames. Yeah. The Flames are just there. So, Montreal is beating up on all of them in terms of like suppression, but they don't have anything going for them offensively on their roster. And then at least they got Kotkaniemi. I'm not going to say his name right.
Close enough.
Close enough. A little Niemis. And then Cole Caulfield finally, like they finally played him and suddenly they're getting just enough offense to counterbalance their defense. So, I mean, they crushed Winnipeg in terms of quality chances against, like destroyed them.
Yeah. Nothing about, I remember when we did our like forecast of the whole postseason where we just kind of made jokes about the teams. Like, I remember, like, I just forget Winnipeg exists. Like, after they traded Line A, I just kind of, like, I have no opinion of them, positive or negative. It's total indifference to them.
Think about this, though. Now that they got their ass kicked by Montreal, how bad does that make Edmonton look?
Yeah.
It's terrible. Because
they're fucking off it.
Like, it's not that Edmonton didn't play, like, horrible, like that horrible against them, but it proves that if you have a good strategy, which for the Oilers, the strategy is don't let McDavid and Draisaitl do anything, then the rest of the team, there's nothing there. So
yeah,
I mean, totally. The Hawks did it the year before, you know, they put mostly Taves, but sometimes Kampf against McDavid. And I don't think that was like necessarily intentional. It doesn't look that way in terms of when JC was coaching anyway. It kind of just lined up that way, you know, top versus top. Because at least for shift charts, if you look at shift charts by shift, it doesn't look like he got thrown out there like specifically for that reason. But it ended up being that Taves, Kubalik, and Saad were amazing.
They swallowed them alive.
McDavid and Draisaitl actually did score against the Hawks, but only went away from Taves.
Yeah, they had that one game where McDavid went off one game and Edmonton won, and that was the only game they won in the series, I think. And for the rest part, they mostly contained McDavid, if I remember correctly. So, but yeah, and then like I'm watching it as I'm talking. Tampa's up 2-0 on Carolina in the third, so that's probably going to be the end of Carolina, which isn't. I mean, this series, I'm surprised the series only went five games. Or seems like it's only going to go five games, but Tampa's terrifying. And I think what we need is like Vegas appears to have come back to life. So I don't want to immediately crown Colorado in that series, but the whole point of what I'm saying is I need a Colorado Tampa Stanley Cup final.
That's what I had too.
That's what I want to see. Cause I think it's going to be entertaining as hell.
Before the playoffs started, I had Colorado beating the Lightning in the final. I filled it out on NHL.com.
Oh yeah. I don't know if I did that this year or not, but
you know what's really interesting is this next round will be the first time teams play outer division.
Yeah.
And the thing with Colorado is like, so they've been pretty damn good at home. Obviously that one game was close, but in general, if they win tonight, even if that series goes seven, they get Kadri back in seven.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like Colorado is going to win that series against Vegas. Like I missed their last two games, so I don't really know what had happened, but.
Well, you missed. So the best statistical team in the NHL since 2007, 2009, when the data goes back to then, Colorado in the regular season has taken the top seed. They're just the best. They now also own the worst statistical three-game spread in the playoffs, thanks to the last three games against Vegas. So Vegas has crushed them statistically.
Vegas has Hossa too. Yo, did you guys see Marian Hossa's like a shoot fighter now? Like for fun, he's like a boxer.
No,
I mean, Marian Hossa can do whatever he wants. He's Marian Hossa.
In the basket this morning, I was like, holy shit. Like, he's just like, yeah, like, I'm kind of done with hockey. I'm going to fight people now. I was like, all right. Sorry to go off on that tangent, but I was just Hossa.
It's fine. I mean, we're into June here, and I imagine in July and August, the tangents are going to get further and further away from whatever our main topic was supposed to be. So it's fine. And then Marian Hossa's name is always welcome on these airwaves.
Oh yeah. I would imagine that Vegas kind of like this, they knew like, all right, we got a plan to beat Colorado. Like that's the Stanley Cup final basically. Unless they meet the Lightning or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their top guys are just eating up Colorado's top guys. If Shepard was on here, he'd be talking about, they need more from their lower lines and there hasn't been enough adjustment on that end. That could cause trouble. But the top guys, you would think that like McKinnon would be better at 5-on-5, but he and Landeskog and Rantanen are being like munched on. And Sod's line, which is technically the third line, I think he's technically playing. Like if you were
he doesn't have Kadri, so that line's kind of funky.
Yeah. He's playing with like Compter and Jost, I want to say. And Jost is usually, I think, the third line. But either way, that's the only line that Semai is going. And because Saad has, what, 6 goals in 8 games or something? Because
he's amazing.
Because apparently he can only score in the playoffs, like on every shot he takes. But yeah, I don't know. Vegas has played so well the last 2 games. I don't know if Colorado, like to a dominating degree, could be Vegas that comes out.
Colorado needs Leonard back in that.
You know, and mm-hmm. and while we're Leonard back in that, so we can give up 7 more.
Dude, they dunked on him. It was funny.
I think they. I don't know if they, like, he was sitting on the bench for 2 weeks, and then they threw him in. It's not the best situation for Leonard.
He's sitting on the bench talking shit on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I mean, if you want to go back to 2015, like, Scott Darling came in cold to a playoff series and did pretty damn well, so.
Until game 6.
Yeah, well, but yeah. It hadn't been that long for Scott, or for Darling, because he, it had only technically been, like, since the end of the regular season, because he played, like, the last game or something in the regular season, so. Couple of games off technically in the playoffs, and then he came in.
Yeah, I think I just run hot and cold on Leonard. Like, 1 week I'll think, oh, you know what, I kind of like him. He's kind of like he's outspoken. He has some good things, but then he'll say something else. Like, no, I hate him. And there's never a neutral territory with him.
You know,
I like him or I hate him.
I'm just gonna throw this out there, and you guys can tell me if you have thoughts on it. I have watched the Hawks a pretty long time now, and that's the first time I saw a goalie basically like hang his defense out to dry in the press.
That's when I started erring more on the dislike side of the Leonard spectrum, because I don't like when you air out in any sport and or in anything anywhere really. Like, I don't like when you air out your coworkers in public.
Your teammates, yeah.
Yeah, like, coworkers, teammates, whatever. Like, do that behind closed doors. And like the way he'd also like stare down whatever defenseman blew the coverage that resulted in the goal. He did that a few times too.
Oh, so. Yeah. Well, they should have stared him down in the shootouts. I'm not trying to be a douche, but like, that really drove me crazy. I was like, dude, like, Crawford got, like, he had to bail the defense out so many times, and he never said anything.
Oh, he actually was actually funny when, like, if a defender would do something like, really odd. Like, I remember when Seabrook scored the own goal in that one of the
outdoor games, game.
Yeah. And Crawford was like, well, he's a good defender, you know, he's a good player, he's not gonna miss shots like that or something that. And you were like, oh, Crawford.
But Crawford, I have the Crawford jersey from that game because I was dead ass like, he would have had a shutout, and technically no Penguins scored on him.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Corey.
Oh man. So, I mean, since we did mention a few Blackhawks, do you guys have any Blackhawks thoughts? I mean, the world's just ended. Team Canada won, so Bodan and Hagel got some gold medals, which was good for them. Lucas Reichel was pretty good all tournament long. I don't know if you guys have any burning thoughts from the Worlds. I watched very little of it because it was on during the workday, and I didn't really have time to flip over to it.
Signed Gerard Gallant. That's my world's thoughts.
Yeah,
because as LBR has pointed out multiple times, look at the team that he just won with.
Yeah,
yeah, and look at who he went through. Because Russia's team was—I mean, obviously, was missing NHL players, but they had some of the not all NHL, but some because like Zadorov was there. But
there it is. We knew we'd get there eventually.
Hey, she said it, not me.
Slide it in there, okay. But Russia was really good. They went through them. They went through the U.S., who was good. And then they beat Finland, who I thought was probably the best. I thought they had the best goaltender, and I think they were the best as a team, a balance of offense, defense. And they went through them all. Easily the three best teams of the tournament. I thought maybe Germany could surprise, but they didn't, and U.S. crushed them. But and Boudin only played like 10 minutes a night. They leaned very, Gallant leaned heavily, heavily on his top four, which had power in it by the end of the tournament too, because he started on the lower line and then jumped up easily. And then Hagel played mostly on the third line. It was more of a checking line than a, and he ended with no points, but he did have a goal disallowed at one point. Okay. And then Peary had like, I think, three goals, but they were all in the earlier games, I want to say.
So Brandon Peary was freed, is what you're saying?
Sure. He didn't play. He played less than Hagel did. So it was kind of like, because he was technically there, they're allowed to have 13 forwards on the bench, and they, he was their 13th. He wasn't on a set line. They just kind of threw him out there every once in a while, rolling on different lines. So, I mean, if you have that opportunity, if you don't have, you have a guy that the only thing that he really can do is offense. And so you're just like, I'll throw you out there every once in a while, just to offense. I guess it can work in that type of tournament.
Yeah.
But, the Blackhawks players were fine. Kubalik looked good. I think we said this last time. Kubalik looked good. Kurashev looked good for the most part. He was less good in the game against Germany. He got a primary assist, which was nice, but he had some, he like coughed up the puck a couple of times. I think the other team was picking on him a little bit though, like focusing on him. Cause he ended up being the puck carrier on his line a lot, which is something that I wish he had done more with the Blackhawks. But I think by design, his line, that wasn't his point, and he was very good at it most of the tournament. And then Germany was targeting him. And then other than those ones, anybody else that went, I didn't really, Zadorov was fine too.
No burning thoughts like about the Kazakhstan hockey team?
Huh?
No burning thoughts about the team from Kazakhstan?
No.
Did you guys see the meme of the like Habs logo on Borat when he's like, I'm going to America?
Yes. Yes. I'm also glad they were starting to get fans back in Montreal, although it looks like they want to burn down the city. Just if they win the next round, the city may not survive.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If they beat the Avs or Knights, I mean,
it's going to be like that time James Hetfield set himself on fire at a Metallica Guns N' Roses show. And
that was an accident.
It was an accident. Sorry. I didn't.
Oh, I was messing.
But yeah. I saw the episode of Behind the Music. Yeah.
It's bad.
That's our music pod. We'll talk about Metallica and Guns N' Roses leading to riots in Montreal.
There's a rule about the jerseys in the playoffs. Like you have to pick which home and away jersey you're going to wear before the playoffs start. But if they could do like what the NBA does, it would be really funny if the Avs won and they wore the Nordique against the Habs.
They should. If there was a, like, because of the way the seating works, it won't happen. But if Colorado could win the Stanley Cup in Montreal wearing the Nordiques jerseys, I think that would be hilarious.
Oh my, that's like shit I do on NHL.
That would be the most spiteful way to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, they can't do that. But they can win the like a buy into the Stanley Cup in Montreal.
Yeah. Like,
my God.
No,
Montreal's got to hope that Vegas wins, because I think their style of play is a little bit closer to each other, because it's all like defense more than let me fly the zone and that kind of stuff. But you never know. Montreal could make it through. Who knows?
I just don't know if Montreal has the scores to get past one of those teams. Like Tyler Toffoli is not going to carry you past, you know, either one of them, in my opinion. Like, Carey Price and the defense have been great, but they need goals against those teams.
Yeah, like eventually, yeah. Like Carey Price has been playing out of his mind, but I don't see how a team like Vegas or especially Colorado, or I mean Tampa too, like if they somehow Montreal got to the final and they face Tampa, one of those teams is going to break down the defense and break down that goaltending.
I don't even think Carey Price has been playing that well. I think the team in front of him has been protecting him pretty well.
Okay.
A little bit less against Toronto, but like the Jets couldn't get close enough to do much of anything.
Yeah, they pinned them to the outside a lot, and they played that kind of like if they came through the middle, they were getting suffocated. So.
And they did that against Toronto in the last few games pretty well, and they did shut down. Like Toronto is a one-line team without Tavares, so you shut down that one line and they don't have any secondary scoring. Nylander is technically their secondary scoring and he's the only one that scored.
You know what's going to happen to us, you guys? Montreal's going to play the Islanders and it's going to be the most boring final of all time.
You know what? Actually, while we're here, we haven't talked about that series at all. I was watching.
It sucks. It's boring.
But Boston is losing, so it's good.
That's good.
That's how I'm at. Like watching the. I watched a good chunk of Game 5 last night at the bar I was at. So, it was fun watching the Boston fans like get so upset about every little thing. I guess there's a lot of officiating issues in that series. Anytime like Boston fans are upset, I'm happy. So.
Dave, did you see Pasta miss that open net?
I did see him miss that open
net. Oh, my God. I would have made that. Come on.
I mean, the thing is, like, he had time. He could have, like, he didn't have to one time, and he could have caught it, corralled it, dusted it off a few times, and then shot it. But, oh, man. Also, his reaction of just, like, falling to the ice like he'd been shot in the back was pretty.
Pretty cool. It looked like he missed a penalty shot in a soccer game.
Mm-hmm.
Like how guys react in, like, when they're in pens in, like, a championship.
Yeah, no, uh-huh. Like I don't know, like a Mexican soccer player on Sunday night.
Christian Pulisic, my guy.
You know what? I like as a quick sport soccer aside. Like I missed a lot of the playoff hockey this weekend. I'm most upset that I forgot that game was on Sunday night, and I just had like five texts. So like, are you watching this? And missed the whole damn thing. I was even in the damn city where the game was being played, and I missed the whole damn thing.
Well.
Also, I think I mentioned this to you guys before, but like I walked around Denver on Monday, and there's a part, it's Larimer Square, I think. It's like, it kind of had like a Linkin Park feel to me for Chicago.
Jacques Lemaire.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, it's Larimer. But anyway, like it was really like, it was like decked out with all the Avs gear and just walking around town, like everybody was wearing Avs gear, and it just kind of made me nostalgic for when the Hawks used to be like that. So once again, what I'm saying is the Hawks need to win more games.
You know, I don't know if Betsy can really, like, I'm not sure there's a lot of hockey fans by you in general, but
yeah.
For Dave, like, I still see a lot of people with, like, Hawks shit on their cars and, like, stuff on shirts, but I just don't think most of those people pay attention anymore. I think it's just like, oh, yeah, that was fun, like the Bulls in the 90s.
Yeah, I'm still not sure that Chicago is a hockey town. Like, I think when the Blackhawks are good, people get behind the team. Like, that's cool. But, like, if you, like, look at their TV ratings when it's, like, a neutral party, Chicago's never on that list. Like, Buffalo's, like, always in the top 10. That's a hockey-crazy city. Like, yeah, I don't think, like, Chicago's quite there yet. It's
like Northeast.
Bigger. Yeah. Well, yeah, Chicago, just the Northeast in general is bigger into hockey.
Chicago's just really weird because, like, they do, like, people get really into them when they're good. But, like, it's usually just, like, everybody goes back to the Bears.
Yeah, that's true. And especially like Justin Fields mania has already taken over. I was at the Sox game I was at a week ago. I saw four Justin Fields jerseys.
Sheesh.
He hasn't even practiced yet.
That's how it goes, man. I mean, I used to sell jerseys for a living, so I know people are crazy.
I am once again ready to have my heart broken by a Bears young quarterback. So that'll be fun.
When you're talking about though Chicago and jerseys and stuff, it's kind of crazy because when like they're such a good traveling fan base or a mm-hmm. good fan base that's like in other cities.
Yes.
Like they're like America's team or something. Like more people like I've gone to a ton of different arenas and they're not even playing, like not even for Hawks games. And almost assuredly I'm going to see a couple of Hawks jerseys there. I went to see the Rangers and Wild play. That was the last hockey game I went to, fall of 2019. And there were Hawks jerseys. There were Hawks jerseys and then two Habs jerseys at one point that I was like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
This is not your place.
Everybody loves a winner. And I'm sure there were plenty of people, like, obviously the city of Chicago and the surrounding areas went nuts for the team. But I'm sure there were plenty of people that hopped on that bandwagon and probably still are. Or at least claim to be Blackhawks fans. I mean,
that's how it goes. Like some people are in Canada and they just pick the Hawks.
Yeah.
Yep.
And some, I mean, you know, there's New England Patriots fans everywhere and it's not because they're all native to Boston.
Those are all people who left the Bears. I've seen like the Hawks and the Cubs on the road, and like that's, I don't think I've ever seen the Sox or Bulls or Bears on the road, but like they all, like Chicago people travel well, and then there's a shit ton of them in Arizona.
Yeah, well, that's half the population moves there. So
yeah, exactly. Or Florida. So it's
and apparently there is a huge Chicago population in Denver as well.
Yeah, like I know one of my ex-season ticket holder friends is up there. Mm-hmm. And like it's weird because you'll see Hawks people you know on TV or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we got a few other things we're going to talk about, but we're going to take a quick break before we do all that. So come on back on the other side of this timeout and find out whatever that's going to be.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. And as promised before the break, we got a few more things on the agenda to tick off before we get out of here and go watch Colorado and Vegas in what should be a pretty damn entertaining Game 5 this evening. But if you've been paying attention to SecondCityHockey.com, we've been doing a lot of deep dives on a lot of the players from the 2021 season. We've had Kirby Dach up there for sure. Who are some other ones we've written about? There's been Kubalik, DeBrincat.
I wrote about Kalanuk last week.
We wrote about Kalanuk. We've had Hinostroza written about, Suter, Hagel. So there's a lot already up. There's a lot more coming. So keep an eye out for those as we continue to kind of put a bow on the 2021 season. But Shepard, Mill, and Betsy have been handling a lot of those, and they've been doing a fantastic job with them, by the way. So check those all out. But I wanted to just ask you guys here, when we have a little bit more of a open-ended format, is there anything in particular you guys have learned or any opinions you've had changed about the players from the 2021 Blackhawks as a result of these articles? Mill, you said so go right ahead.
Yeah, well, I did one about Strome, and I kind of think, because you and I were talking about this, his numbers, like his underlying numbers, haven't really changed that much. So it's just kind of showing you the quality of shots is something that the Hawks are struggling with certain lines. And then with the Kalanuk thing, just based on the comments, I learned a lot of people are somehow excited about Riley Stillman.
I guess it would depend on your level of excitement. Like with him, like I feel like he could be a decent third pairing guy, which isn't bad. And if his contract's only at like just over $1 million for the next three seasons, if he turns out to be a reliable third pairing contributor, that's good. A guy would like that, but I don't think he's going to be anything more than that.
Oh, totally. I just don't think we've seen that much of him to get any type of like, you know, wave of excitement going. It's kind of neutral for me.
But haven't we, isn't his sample size pretty much the same as Kalanuk? Can we love him?
But here's the thing. It's like Stillman's just out there. Either he made a couple of mistakes or it's just been not noticeable. Kalanuk is damn noticeable with some of those passes.
That. The sample is so short. So we keep talking about like because I'm going to be writing about Mitchell and Beaudin and how they hit a wall this season. But I feel like some of that had to do with they hit a wall at a certain game point, and Kalanuk and Stillman they didn't play long enough to hit that wall, really.
That's a good point.
Well, I think it too, sample size is so skewed because it's like some guys get more minutes, some guys get more time in a different zone, some guys have regular partners. It's, especially with the defense, it's bleh. It's all over the place.
Well, and the other thing with Stillman is like he's a year younger than Kalanuk. Yeah, he's a year younger than Kalanuk actually.
Kalanuk was a late bloomer.
I didn't realize he's that old. But Stillman also, like, he played 40 games in Florida, and the fact that he was involved in a trade for Lucas Carlson and Lucas Walmark, like, the fact that he was already traded away from one organization, that I think that that kind of dims you a little bit, because if you're the team that drafted you decided that you were expendable in a trade, like that's a red flag for me.
I will guarantee you that in 2 years, I will not remember Lucas Walmart played for the Hawks.
I forgot until just this conversation.
Yeah. So
he was, like, he was of all the guys they had, like, I think he was the most anonymous this season. That would be the word he would get from me.
I was just like, what? Like they signed him and then he kind of played a few games and wore a number up in the 70s, was like 71 or something. And I was just like, okay. And then he just gets traded and it's like, all right, no opinion.
So I kind of get where you're coming from, Dave, with the whole like, well, they've given up on you, but like there are, and I'm not saying he's going to be anywhere near this player that I'm about to mention, but there are plenty of examples of teams that traded a very good player. Montreal Canadiens traded Cervachev. Mm-hmm. They traded him in the Drouin trade.
Yeah.
And obviously that was, they were trying to go for quality and quality, but it was just the most ridiculous. Like, why would you give that good of a defensive prospect up, even for Drouin, who had played pretty well?
This was
different than what, I don't think Stillman is anywhere near that quality, but it's like, I don't know. I don't mind going after these kind of reclamation projects or these, like, because it didn't cost much. I still think taking on, they should have gotten better for taking on Connolly's contract, because, but I don't know. I'm fine with giving him a chance. I don't know why I think everybody on the pod, because I don't think Shepard likes him very much either. And I'm like, yeah, he was fine.
The Drouin thing though, don't you guys remember there was like a bunch of controversy, like he wanted out of Tampa and he had beef with Yzerman and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, there was, but like Montreal doesn't have to be like, cool, I'm going to now get, yes, I want him, but I'll give you one of our best defensive prospects in the system.
Yeah. Get
him.
Yeah.
Well, so, they didn't have to, but they're stupid and did.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that sometimes teams don't make, I mean, the Blackhawks gave up Danault for trash.
Yeah. And that, like that, see that, and that trade, like I've seen, because Deneau's doing so well with Montreal right now, like I've seen that trade come up a lot. Like, I'm not upset that they traded Deneau, because I think that they had, I think that team, like, my, you know, if they get past St. Louis in that series, like, it's not, you know, if Kane and Panarin go on a heater, they can win a few.
They weren't bad, themselves. Yeah.
Yeah, so like that team, it's just like the players that they traded him for was probably
was
not.
It was Fleischman in that one,
that's
right?
That's what I'm saying.
Fleischman and Dale Weiss.
I thought Dale Weiss goal is only Hawks goal. Dutch Gretzky, baby.
I have no problem with giving up prospects when you're chasing a cup. And it's just who they traded him for. And the reasoning behind it, because the reasoning Bowman gave was that they wanted to give Tara Vinen two bigger wingers to play with on the third line. And one, if you're replacing two thirds of a line at the trade deadline, that's not a good look. And then two, Tara Vinen hadn't played center most of that season. And as we know now, does not play center as well as he does wing. And we knew it then too, like Q kept not putting him at center because he was struggling there. And it ends up, that's because he shouldn't play center.
And it was
one of those situations where it just, the whole narrative that Bowman and Q didn't see eye to eye, it was one of those situations where you're like, yeah, I can see why that's a narrative and probably true, but like, why you need to talk to your coach about that. That's one of those trades that was just so, he was using Danault, you know, with Kruger at the time and had moved him up to the third line right before they were about to, like they had just moved him above Kruger before he got traded. And it was like, it looked like Q was seeing that he could play higher in the lineup than just 4C, which obviously he could, as we see with Montreal. So it was, that's the reason that trade sucks. You were just like, that's just trash from the start.
The thing is with the Hawks, like when they were really good, they would get guys like a Fleischman and then they'd go off because Q would get them a matchup. But like, it
was
so good.
When did that happen other than with Hanzus?
Johnny Oduya.
I mean, like,
no, Johnny Oduya was good before he came to the Blackhawks.
But I thought he was, but he was played the best hockey of his career.
But he also hit his, like, he was playing in his prime here, but he was playing top four quality in New Jersey, for example. and he was just underrated because that team sucked, but he was very good. And then the minute you put him on a good Blackhawks team with a good partner, of course he's going to be even better.
Mm-hmm. You're just partial to it because he played in Atlanta for a while.
He's good in Atlanta too. that's just what I'm saying. Like, I'm sure other than Hanzus, what player came over and played above what we thought he would play? Hanzus played on that second line and nobody expected. They were like, oh, they're just getting reinforcements.
Maybe Frolik.
I thought Frolik played less than what they thought he was going to play. They wanted him to play in the top and he didn't. He just couldn't click. And so they put him on that fourth line and it ended up probably extending his career a little bit because while he got his offense back after he left the Hawks a little bit, the fact that he was a dual threat, I think, kept him from like falling out of the league like a Stahlberg.
And he's on is he still on Montreal? Because he played 8 games there in the season, but hasn't played once in the postseason.
No, he's not playing in the postseason.
Yeah, so, but hey.
He's not, you know, not great.
I think the problem I had with when they traded for Fleischman was that he was okay before he started getting injured all the time. But like in the last like 8 years of his career, he was playing like 20 games a year. He was always friggin' hurt. And I was like, oh, great. But like, again, I just, at the time, I'm all buying in, like, just win the cup again, maybe one more time. Because that team was okay, that 16 team.
Yeah.
I would have been fine if those weren't the two players they targeted for. Because they didn't just give up Deneau for those two trash players. They also added in a second for some reason. Like, why?
Well, they got that back in the Shaw trade.
Yeah.
Did they get Montreal's back?
They got Montreal's, but they got the Brinkett, so I'm not going to complain about that one.
Mika Rantanen just missed a wide open net that even Pastrnak would have hit.
What is it with guys just like getting to the playoffs and like forgetting how to play?
Well, it may not have been as bad as Pastrnak's one, but I've been like kind of glancing over my shoulder here, and it appears Colorado has had the puck in the Vegas end of the ice for about the last 3 minutes straight. And then, but now Colorado took a penalty, so never mind.
So the Blackhawks didn't, by the way, get back that pick.
No, I know it was Montreal's.
Yeah, no, they didn't get back they didn't get back the pick that they gave.
I know. Yeah. No, I just meant they got a second round pick for Shaw,
and
they
became Alex DeBrincat, right?
Yeah, it was a different pick. She's right.
Yeah, because the Montreal pick that Chicago gave them is Romanov, which is the kid that everybody wants them to be playing more. Now, Alexander Romanov. How old is he? 21? Yeah. I don't know if he's going to be any good. Who knows? No idea.
Well, if you're into Russian history, that's quite the important last name. And that's all I got about Alex Romanov. All right. Well, I think we can wrap up all the Hawks. If you enjoyed this flashback to the 2016-17 Blackhawks, there might be a lot more coming this summer because the present situation, we're just kind of waiting to see what happens with this team in the fall, so we can just wax poetic about the good old days for a while.
Can I just throw one more thing to the panel?
Sure.
We should just clarify, you guys were thinking, that we're talking about Philip Deneau and not Blackhawks legend Marco Dano.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, just in case anybody was wondering.
Sure. I'm sure that was a burning thought of everyone listening to this podcast.
I can't wait till his picture gets used for Bagskate.
Oh, I'm not. Yeah. I'm going to use it for this podcast. All right. Well, I believe it was Shepard's turn to do the food take. And apparently, and he's not around. So I guess Betsy, you said you thought you had something that you can offer in his spot. So floor is all yours.
Sure. So, let's talk about chili.
Absolutely.
In certain regions, putting beans in chili, like in Texas, they are very not for putting beans in chili. So what is, like, I don't mind beans in chili. I've had both, and I've never complained either way. I like beans and chili. It's great to me, but there are some people that are like hardcore, do not do it. That's disgusting. And I was wondering where you guys fell. Cause you're from up north. So, I don't think Texas is the only Southern state that believes that either. I think there's other states that are so, like, only.
What would be like in a Texas style chili? Because I feel like for me, chili is usually like meat, beans, and then usually some tomatoes, and then all the other stuff that you toss in adds in the liquid nature to it. So the three more solid food items are usually, at least in the recipe I'm used to, is meats, beans, and tomatoes.
Okay, so Texas chili it doesn't contain beans or any tomato sauce or any tomato product. It is meat, some type of thickener, chili paste, usually made from peppers. And it probably is more like a stew. It comes across more as a stew, would come across as a stew to anybody who's normally eating. It actually doesn't really taste that different. Even I know we're like, hey, these are made from tomatoes and these are made from peppers, but they can taste pretty similar and the texture's very similar. They just don't have beans.
Yeah. I feel like beans are in chili. I think that's where my flag is getting planted.
But the best chili I've ever had was from Texas. So, and it didn't have beans in it. It was so good.
Well, I'll tell you guys what, I use beans since I don't eat meat. But I do make chili sometimes with fake ground beef too. So I will use a substitute and make Texas style chili and test the theory.
All right. Yeah. The thing, chili is always a cold weather thing. At least for the Midwest, at least chili is not a summer food.
But, not eating it now. It's 85 degrees out.
Yeah. And I'd complain about the humidity, but Betsy will tell us we're wrong. So
she's right. But we've lived in this black hole forever. So
yeah. Yeah. I think chili should have beans in it. And this is a regional thing. So Betsy, you won't know about this, but Mill, are there beans in Shoup's chili?
I believe there are.
I think so too. Cause that's pretty good. Chicago suburb chili.
Do you remember Chelly's chili?
No, never had the pleasure. I know it existed, but I never went.
Oh yeah.
Was it the one in Detroit right by the stadium? Isn't it?
I don't know if it's still there, but when he went to Detroit, they moved it.
Yeah. I remember driving by when I went to the Lions stadium, Ford Field. That's the one.
I think I'm with you that I think beans enhance the chili for me personally. But like I said, I'll have to test the theory. I can't say that I've had Texas chili, so it's hard for me to, it might just be a totally different thing than what I call chili.
Yeah. Cause I don't remember putting beef broth in chili when we make it with beans. But that's usually that's one of the things that gets put into Texas chili. It's very more about the spice and the meat than it is about the tomatoes in there. But my mom makes a northern style, but she always is the difference between that and my dad's side of the family. So half is in Chicago, but half was in Louisiana for a very long time. So one of my uncles has a chili recipe that doesn't have any beans in it too. Now that I'm thinking about it.
You know, I think I mean it's gonna be tough to do because digitally, but we need to do a chili cook-off somehow this during the colder months.
I'm just gonna be like Homer when he has to put cowboy boots on to go to it.
Exactly. But yeah, I think I've had being in the suburbs where there's a zillion chains and you end up going to them eventually. I'm pretty sure I've had Texas style chili, a Texas Roadhouse. I'm not gonna call that authentic Texas chili, but it's probably made without beans. So, but now I'm intrigued. And now I feel like I need to step up my chili game this winter and see if I can get a Texas style one. So
this is a good take because it's really interesting.
Yeah. I feel like it requires further research and we're going to have to put a pin in this and come back to it in November. Go ahead, Mill.
I was going to say, if we all go to a Hawks game, we could all just bring different chili with us.
Well, there's nothing better for me. If you get it's usually in November when it starts to dip down into the 40s as the high temperature during the day. And put together a pot of chili and there's a Bears game at noon and then a Hawks game at 6 at night. And you just don't go anywhere and you just eat the chili for lunch and dinner.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. That's Sunday. You name a better Sunday than that.
Or if there's just football on all day.
You watch football and then there's a Hawks game at night. Yeah, that's the ideal Sunday for me.
I think October is chilly month. And a lot of bigger cities, and I'm sure Chicago is one of them, will have like chili cook-offs and stuff like that. And chances are you're probably going to have a Texas chili at them at some point. Not the best one that I've ever had. My work has a kind of like, it's like a Taste of Atlanta. And it's a bunch of different restaurants come and set up booths on our work campus. And they just have like a little table and stuff. And one of the best chilies, but not the actual best one I've ever had, was a Texas chain that was in Atlanta. And they did the Fritos chip thing, as the container where you slop the chili in a Fritos bag.
Oh, so like a walking taco, but
a walking
chili?
Taco, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But it didn't have beans in it, which I'd never had that type of, like, it be in the Fritos bag without, they technically weren't Fritos. They were like an off-brand something. Hell, but they were those tortilla
chips. Corn chips.
Yes. They looked and tasted exactly like Fritos.
Compared to Lay's Fritos.
Yes. But that was very good. But they were like, they were telling us about how they won the Atlanta, like, I can't remember if they were talking about the Buckhead one, which is like an upper part of our city. They won their the chili cook-off when they were the first. They were bragging about how like they were pretty much the first Texas one that had won in a while. And I was like, okay. And I didn't think about it literally just now. And I was like, that's right, that didn't have any beans.
You know, it's funny, like, you brought up the Taste of Atlanta. Like, I used to go to Taste of Chicago to see bands. They'd sometimes have cool bands. And then I've worked in a bunch because my company used to vend the shirts. And I don't think because it's so hot in July in Chicago, I don't think I've ever had seen chili there or, like, anything hot like that. So
yeah, ours is because the actual Taste of Atlanta, there's, like, different ones. You have, like, Taste of Midtown, Taste of Buckhead, Taste of Brookhaven, that kind of stuff. And then this one was like just for, they did one just for like the Delta people. And they did some just for the company I work for and a couple of other of these like bigger companies that are in Atlanta. They just did like little specific ones. And I just know you go down at like 11:30. You don't eat the dinner the night before because you are going to like eat so much food. And then you have to take a break because then you have to go up and try to eat more desserts. The deep fried, we had one in the fall of 2019, deep fried donuts with, this type of ice cream in the middle of it was the best dessert I've ever had.
So what I'm hearing is, Betsy, do you have like a place you can stash like three people to,
I know, like, well, you can invite,
because
can
I'm invite like,
guests to
oh
this.
Man, this, yeah. Well, I mean, just festivals and things like that in general that are like starting to come back. I'm genuinely just so excited for everything to be able to do things again this summer and fall. And now I want to go to Atlanta. So, or
Taste of Chicago just usually ends up with me at the distillery tent until Weezer plays. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
I was going to say that like Taste Atlanta has, is an underrated food city because not only is Southern food pretty good, but there's also a pretty decent variety of other types of food here. Cause we have like Chicago style, pizzerias here. We have New York based stuff. We have pretty good Italian. There's a whole like Indian Korean section that is superb. They have some of the best sushi places here. So it's really underrated because of how multi like dimensional the city is. Cause it's not really just Georgia. It's very much like a Northern city displaced a little bit. So I recommend if people come here, try Southern food, but also you can probably get some of the best of other types of food here.
This episode brought to you by the Atlanta Tourism Board.
I know.
But no, it sounds, you sell it very well. But I think
the weather sucks, but the food is good.
Okay.
Keep it hot.
It's on the flag for the city. Weather sucks, food good. But I think that is a good way to wrap up this here episode of the Musings on Madison podcast. We're probably going to take next week off and then regroup a little bit and then probably start looking more towards the things coming up this summer with free agency and the expansion draft, although Betsy Millen Shepherd did a very good look to the NHL draft on Monday's Deep Dish episode. And you should check that out if you haven't already. But then we'll probably take next week off and then we'll be back at some point. I mean, as things present themselves, and keep an eye on the website, secondcityhockey.com. We'll have plenty of articles, more deep dives into individual players coming up. And then eventually we'll also turn our attention towards free agency and the draft and all that other stuff coming our way. So keep an eye out for that. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. For Mill and Betsy, I'm Dave. And as always, go Hawks.